The Institute for Communication and Religion at Seton Hall University provides a nexus for ongoing scholarly exploration of communication topics critically important to religion and society. One especially critical juncture is the role of religion in our democratic process. To study the intersection of religion and politics, in 2020, the Institute hosted a series of expert presentations addressing religious issues in the historic Trump-Biden presidential race. We are proud to present these presentations here in podcast format, and we are grateful to the Lilly Fellows Program for their generous funding of this initiative.
Okay, so Dr. Arnett, thank you so much for participating in this additional Q&A of the leftover questions that we had submitted. So the first question comes from Jessica New. She's a student, and her question is, how is Trump still able to pull evangelical votes despite his lack of regard for morals, ethics, or seemingly religion versus a Democratic candidate who is a devout Catholic and seems to have a deeper sense of religion and spirituality? So to the best of your ability, if you could answer that question.
I don't mean this to be a trivial answer, but a very serious one. I think it's really important for us not to ask the question. The psychological makeup and the rationale for a particular kind of behavior, I think if indeed one ponders that too long, it takes away the possibility of doing good work. Dorothy Day would want to focus, I think, on the good work. And that's not an issue of being nice. It's an issue of being incredibly pragmatic. I can tell you that that question goes through my head often, and I try to run it out because it is an invitation, one, to a kind of dismissive discourse with another in your head, but also it's an invitation to self-righteousness.
Thank you. Okay. So this next question comes from Patrick Manning. He is a faculty and admin here at Seton Hall. And he wants to know, here, actually, your case, Dr. Arnett, for why practices are more important than stories? Or is it an either-or situation?
One of the things, if you look at the notion of narrative in Catholicism, practices, story, collective buy-in provides the element of a narrative, philosophically and practically. The reason that practices are crucial is that there are times in which when you are really in a problematic situation, someone telling you a story seldom helps. What helps are the practices doing one thing after another, and then eventually the story beginning to give you a sense of meaning. If you have a friend who's incredibly sad, the primary task is not to tell your friend why the friend should not be sad. The primary task is to have work on practices of getting out of bed at a good time, engaging in projects that are worthwhile, and then eventually the story begins to emerge again.
Good answer to that one as well. All righty. This next question comes from Cassidy Kelly, and she's a student here at Seton Hall. So she wants to know, will state and government and religion be separated like it should be? So I'm guessing, obviously, the separation of church and state. Do you think that it's still something that we practice, and do you think that'll change in the future?
The reason for separation of church and state is, at least in the United States, was a rebellion against the ability of the government to impose a given position. And the separation of church and state in the United States, it is permitting multiple forms of religion, not simply one. The primary concern was the imposition of one religious position. Do I think that could happen here? No, and I certainly hope not. The danger of imposing a singular position is generally the invitation to some form of a banality of evil. It's generally helpful to see multiple positions, even the ones you disagree with.
This question comes from Zachary Nickel. He's a student here at Seton Hall. And he wants to know, for Gen Z participants who may be voting for the first time in November, have been seen as the least religious generation. Do you see any impact of the intersection between generational differences and religious ideologies in candidate approval?
I'm probably not a big fan of generational research. And the reason for that is it presupposes group stereotypes. And we all know people who are fit particular categories and others who do not fit particular categories. And I think could fit some aged baby boomers I know. I think it can also, there are people coming out of this generation who are deeply committed to the faith. And I think it generally doesn't, it serves well for marketing people to act smart at a, what I would call, pardon me for this, a very thin level in doing that generational discussion. And I think the primary thing that needs to happen is to recognize the locality and context and struggles that people are working with. I've worked from a postmodern position, which works with the primary metaphor of difference. But this is really a moment in which we need to bring difference together in such a way that we don't have ongoing fragmentation. This is a somewhat of a scary moment. And anytime we generate artificial divisions, I think we need to ask, is this really helpful?
All right. So this question comes from William Weber, who is also a student here at Seton Hall. And he would like to know, what are some dividing factors of religion in politics and how can this be improved? So I guess he's referring to more controversial topics that are discussed in political discourse.
I think the primary thing that unites a constructive people of faith and politics is an element of service. And a classical understanding of politics is to be assisting others in terms of the good life for the within a polis. And the way in which we use politics today is term is often used individualistically, in which we're trying to get our position contrary to another. And historically, at least from a classical position, the common good is the primary importance. There are a number of people who have done political science from that perspective, particularly Anna Arendt. And Arendt's work presupposes that you can have a common good in terms of the public and simultaneously a diversity of opinion within that public, but the public does not have a unanimous position. There are multiple opinions within it.
So this next question comes from Natalia, and she, it looks like she's a student at Duquesne. So her question is there a moral imperative for those with religious beliefs to persuade the votes of others?
That's a good question, and I think I'm kind of like Emmanuel Levinas, who really, you know, there's a whole host of people who dislike rhetoric and the element of persuasion. I think I would be more interested in invitation and discussion of why, but I wouldn't want to use the term persuasion. The way in which Levinas works is that we are derivative selves, which we are called out to by the events that are before us. And being called out to try to make a point about why a particular position is important seems crucial, but I'm not sure I would want to use the term persuasion. And I am trying to work from a position that I think would be more akin to Dorothy Day's position on peace.
Right.
But she was incredibly assertive about positions. But there's something about you thinking about persuading the other to come over to your side versus saying the key is to try to lay out a given position in such a way that it invites participation from others.
Okay. So the next question comes from Megan. She wants to know the panelists' thoughts, but your thoughts on the non-Christian religious traditions have been understood by the Trump administration in terms of their relationship with the state, particularly since it has aligned itself with conservative Christianity in terms of policy and outreach. So I guess kind of what are your thoughts on that? And then there's another question after, but I'll let you do this one first.
I think it's to protect the rights of all people who have religious beliefs, and Duquesne University is a Catholic and Spiritan university, and we have people from a variety of faiths here. And in our PhD program, currently we have a number of people who are Muslim. And it's really crucial, I think, to protect the notion of faith, particularly when it's a recognition that there's more in the world than you and me. So if you're looking at Cecilia Bach in her work on ethics, she talks about maximalist and minimalist values. The value of religion is the importance of recognizing there's more in the world than you and me. And the notion of faith brings in the notion of a third. And what happens with the danger of religion tied to self-righteousness is that the third is forgotten, and the individual holder of a given position becomes the primary sovereign.
And the second part to that question is, do you think the dynamic will change moving forward under a second term under the current president or in a new administration?
I do not see a dramatic change in terms of the current administration. I think what we see is what we'll get. And only over time would we be able to see what the other administration would provide. But there are some basic, there are people who would want to push a given religious position, that if indeed others started to push back with a different religious position, would call forth the importance of separation of church and state. I think that's the primary protection, not just of one group, but of all of them. In trying to mobilize a religious group, I think I'd rather mobilize people around ideas rather than ideology that divides them from others.
So the last question, there's plenty of questions. We had over 200 submissions, but I just chose a few for you today. But our last question is from Lada, who is a student at Seton Hall. And they would like to know, in order to understand the dynamics of the 2020 election, how important is the knowledge of different religious traditions? And in just a short time that we've spoken, you've mentioned the importance of understanding the diversity of varying religious practices.
It's a really smart question. You know, I just think it's important to know what matters to another human being. To ignore the religious practices of another, who you are attempting to work with or be in dialogue with, is foolhardy. I think we are in one of the most anti-intellectual moments in my lifetime. And a Catholic ethicist by the name of Alistair MacIntyre uses this term called emotivism, decision-making by personal preference. And we find it everywhere. Religion should not be your personal preference. It should be a narrative that situates and shapes you, that gives you identity. And you should, and all of us should want to learn what shapes others and what gives them identity. And a refusal to do that is a reliance on a very modern conception that the individual self can function regardless of the narrative environment. It is, at best, the focus on the individualistic self in our culture today is a moral cul-de-sac that is deeply problematic. And I think the kind of fragmentation that we are experiencing today is a direct result of it.
All right. So that was some of the questions that we had left over from the conference. Again, thank you for your time. It's